I'm continuing. I just started a discussion of the Prakriti Rasa Shatadushini of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Grieve warning about rasa. Generally, we want to inspire everyone to aspire for Krishna consciousness, which culminates in prema rasa. You all know what prema rasa means, theoretically. It's difficult to translate into English. So it's a grave warning. Especially in the Sampradaya of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we're aiming at Vraja Bhakti Rasa, the highest pinnacle. Radhar Mahima Prema Rasa Shima, the glories of Radharani, which are the limit of Prema Rasa, bliss. But we have to be careful. The warning is there, especially in our Sampradaya. We have to be very careful to see, because the highest level that we're aiming at, it's sex. You want to put it in a straightforward language. We're talking about the romantic affairs between Radha and Krishna. Adi Rasa. Which we're to aspire for. Generally, we find that Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas, they spoke about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. We're not the body, we're eternal spirit souls. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the aim is to go to a level beyond philosophy. That means feelings predominate. It's heart over head. But in this world, if we have heart over head, because our heart is filled with dirty things, then we will tend to misunderstand the pastimes of Radha and Krishna and become inspired for illicit sexual activities. Because Radha and Krishna's pastimes, they are superficially illicit sexual activities. It's very, very dangerous. The Gaudiya Sampradaya is very, very dangerous in that respect, because we're aiming for something so high and so difficult to understand. Brahmara Duralabha Prem, we hear. Even Brahma, the great, philosopher and highly elevated pious person, even for such a person, it's very hard to attain such prem. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu promises to freely distribute that. But then there is some condition. Vishaya charya shai roshe mojiya. Mukhe bolo hari hari. One has to give up sense gratification. Then one can actually enjoy that rasa. He can take pleasure in that. And then his chanting. The chanting will go on. So Srila Prabhupada, in translating this line, we'll find his purport to this song, Parama Karuna, says that there is a condition, and we find that also again and again. Narottam Das sings, Bishaya Charya Kobe Shuddha Hobe Man Tobe Hama Herabo Sri Vrindavan. When I give up the desire for sense gratification and the activity of sense gratification, and the mind is completely pure, then I will be able to actually see Vrindavan. So it's a great warning, because we all have feelings and we all have emotions, and they're very dangerous, because they drag us down, they perpetuate our material existence. Feelings and emotions that's intimately mixed with desire. We desire to get something, we get it, and we're satisfied on the material platform, but it's shuti sukha. It's advertised as happiness. We've heard that it should make us happy, but it doesn't. But not knowing anything else, we go looking. We don't know anything else. We're addicted to the desire for pleasure, but not knowing anything better, we look for it in material sense gratification. So there is prakriti rasa, the feelings that arise from prakriti rasa, material rasa, which is actually, it's oxymoronic, or it's a contradictory term, because the real rasa, that definition is there. Vyatitya bhavana vartma yas chamatkara bharabhu hridi satvojvale bardham svadate satraso mataha. Rupa Goswami gives the definition of rasa. And of course, his book delineating this subject systematically is Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So we're talking about bhakti rasa. And there is the prakriti rasa or the jara rasa, there's the material rasa also, which is the subject matter of dramaturgy or natya shastra, even prior. Chronologically, as we perceive reality, the delineation of mundane emotions and feelings was given by so many in the dramatics, Natya Shastra. That literally means dancing, but that's used for drama also. So that's given by Bharat Muni. Srila Prabhupada refers to him as a great sexologist. He delineates the mundane rasa. And there's so much discussion, as in every facet of traditional Indian life, so much discussion. Is rasa in the heart of the actor and it gets transmitted to the heart of the audience, or is it something that's awakened in the heart? And we have something also, that is rasa something to be attained, or is it given to us, or is it something to be reawakened? And that's a whole big subject matter. But the point is that prakriti rasa is not really rasa at all. And so when we say bhakti rasa, it's like saying sadguru. Guru means a genuine guru, but there are so many bogus gurus that we say sadguru to distinguish the real guru from the bogus gurus. And then all the bogus gurus are also called sadguru. And there's one in particular at the present time, probably people outside India think that that's his specific title, but it's a general title for someone who's an actual guru. We have similar things. In the Bhagavatam we have Satpati Satstriyang Yata, a good husband and a good wife. But a real husband is supposed to be good, and a real wife is supposed to be good. So this term shouldn't be used, but it's just to emphasize. So bhakti rasa, actually rasa means bhakti rasa. When we say prakriti rasa, just like you may say a bogus guru, actually there's no such thing as a bogus guru. Heard that? There's no such thing as a bogus guru. Because as soon as you're bogus, you're not a guru. But what we're talking about is someone who has the appearance of being a guru and is conventionally accepted as a guru, but he's not. So it's a bogus guru. So in the same way, if we say prakriti rasa or jara rasa, it's material rasa. It's not really rasa at all, but it is conventionally understood as such. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is warning us about this, because our practice since time immemorial is to try to enjoy prakriti rasa, material rasa. But the whole endeavor is upside down, back to front, and inside out. There's one word in Indian languages which covers all of those, ulta. The whole idea is to serve Krishna for his happiness. But when, and then automatically, because Krishna is the very first words of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Akhila Rasamrita Sindhu, Krishna is the ocean of all nectarian rasas. Then automatically, if you jump in that ocean, or if you even get a little drop of it, we're going to get wet. So it's automatically, it's blissful. But as soon as we try to enjoy it, then we're not in devotional service. Srila Prabhupada translated bhakti as devotional service. It's commonly translated as devotion. But Srila Prabhupada always translated it as devotional service. So that attitude that I will enjoy is the perverse manifestation of I will serve. So first we have to understand that I am a servant. And then we have to act on that platform, and then we become fixed in the perfection of being a servant. Sambandha Abhideya Prayojan. This will all be discussed in this Prakriti Rasa Shatadushini. Each verse is like a sutra which can be expanded. So the first verse is I read that last time. That summarizes the whole thing. Prakriti Cheshtate Bhai Kabu Rash Hoina Jarya Prakriti Rasa Shuddha Bhakta Gaina. Again, Shuddha Bhakta. This term, bhakta means shuddha. He's an impure devotee. There's no such thing. Actually, if we're to take the word bhakta in the true sense of the term, there's no question of impurity. But these words are used importantly. And then shuddha bhakta. Again, this whole Prakriti Rasa Shatadushini, it's intricately linked with the teachings of Rupa Goswami and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So, as I said last time, he starts the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by defining what he's talking about, what is Shuddha Bhakti. So, Shuddha Bhakta, the term can be understood at different levels. It can mean one who has realized his swarup, or it can be one who's attempting to do so. He knows the principle of not trying to enjoy this world or trying to enjoy Krishna. So the second verse, Prakriti Rasa Shikha Bhikha Shishe China Rati Bina Jai Rash Taha Guru Dena. The second verse is that the word Shisha is used here, disciple. But from the context, it's clear, it's clearly understood, it means a genuine or a sincere disciple. Because Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that a genuine disciple does not approach a guru. I'm expanding the meaning here. Does not approach a guru. He does not ask to be initiated into mundane mellows. He's not seeking something cheap. He's got some idea of what he's after. As Srila Prabhupada gave the example, if you're looking for electrical goods, don't go to the vegetable market. Of course, in this country, as we were saying yesterday, everything's all mixed up. But at least in India, you have all the vegetable vendors in one place and the electrical vendors in another place and the sari merchant, all the shops are in one place, like that. So you should have some idea of what you're looking for. If you're going to approach a guru, you should have some idea of what you're looking for. So a genuine disciple means already should be at least on the platform Atato Brahma Jignasa. We had enough of material existence, had enough of all this trying to enjoy material existence. Now we're looking for that which is spiritual. So he doesn't go to the guru to enjoy something of this world. He doesn't go to a guru, give me blessings so that I can pass my exams, so I can go to America. That doesn't sound proper here in America, but that's a common thing in other countries where you can, the main hope you have to go to America is to do well in your exams, and then you can get a job in IT in America. You're doing IT? Yeah. Or you can be a pujari in ISKCON, and then that's another way. That's another way to come. Which doesn't necessarily mean in either case that you're devoid of devotion, but it's more or less a material arrangement. So you go to a guru to ask for blessings. But a real disciple, someone who's sincere, doesn't ask a guru for anything material. Srila Prabhupada said, the only question I ask my guru is, how can I serve you? Then the guru himself doesn't give rasa without rati. These are all important terms to understand. Rati means a very strong attachment to Krishna. And again, this is all predicated on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Ado Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sangha. Tata Sadhu Sangha. Bhajana Kriya, then an Artha Nivritti. Tato Nishta Ruchistata. So Ruchi and Rati, they're the same thing. They're often equated as the same thing. Ruchi, taste, Rati, attachment. This refers to attachment to Krishna consciousness. So one has to, this is also a debated point, because some say, well, you can just jump right in there at the deep end. You don't have to go through all these things. You can cultivate prema rasa even at the beginning stage. But this is exactly what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is warning about. That don't jump in. Follow the Rupanuga process, the path given by Rupa Goswami and his followers. That there has to be some initial faith. Faith, yeah, means in Krishna, and specifically we're talking about faith in pure devotion, because the end result is prema, ruchistata anasaktas. What is it? No. In the ado shraddha, ruchistata. Anasaktas tato bhava tata prema abhyudanchati. Sadhakanam mayang prema pradur bhave manifests pradur bhave ratim kramaha. Gradually, step by step. Krama means literally step by step. These stages manifest. Anasaktas. Then, so when a guru sees that someone's actually on the platform of attachment to Krishna, then there's a question of introduction of the topics of rasa. And this is detailed. Rupa Goswami gives Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also this ruchi, then practically that's on then the bhav is about to arise. Yeah, every one of these verses could be discussed in great detail. I'll go on to verse 3. Again, very, very important. Nama rasa dui bastu bhakta kabhu janena. nama rase bhedache bhakta kabu balena. That the holy name and rasa are two separate entities. The devotees never consider them to be like that. Now you may say, well, the nama is one thing and the rasa is an experience. But the two are inseparable. There's no arising of rasa without chanting the holy names. We're talking about the Vraja Bhakti Rasa. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes to teach two things, so many things, but or teach or present, reveal Vraja Bhakti Rasa, Prem Rasa, and the holy name. Holy name, of course, it's in one sense nothing new. The glories of the holy name were delineated in the Vaishnava Sampradayas even prior to the advent of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu put so much stress on that. And also Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he delineated the stages of chanting and what ultimately chanting leads to. It leads to the prema bhakti rasa. At least within our Gaurīya Sampradaya, it's always been within our Gaurīya Sampradaya, it's always been understood that nam bhajan is the means for awakening this prema rasa. So discussing, yes, discussing about it, but also chanting. And the minimum is 64 rounds, traditionally. Srila Prabhupada gave us a concession. We take that as his great mercy. But devotees who are very eager to attain that prema rasa, we should see they should be at least as eager to chant plenty of rounds and to accept the kind of austerities that those who traditionally did nam bhajan, they would accept. It's not that one can go on with a life of sense enjoyment or even looking for comfort. Looking for comfort, that's there, just like I heard our devotees came back from Europe and they were thinking, oh, we have such nice facilities here in America compared to the places they visited in Europe. Especially that Lika, the men, they had to stay in tents. And then the toilet is the Indian style, hole in the ground. Srila Prabhupada also made facility in Vrindavan and Bombay and Mayapur, especially for his Western disciples who are not used to discomfort. But traditionally it's changed now in India because India has become modernized and the economy has improved. At least in the middle class that's changed. Otherwise people just take physical difficulties as part of life. It wouldn't be considered a religious austerity, but just like if you're going to a holy place and you're going to a festival and you just sleep outside on the ground, that's all. You don't expect anything more for most people. I was impressed once in the winter. I went to Kurukshetra. It's cold in the winter. And at the Sarovara, what's that called? I just don't remember the name. That was recently renovated. I'm trying to remember. I can't remember. Recently renovated. That was done by... brain fag. Brahma Sarova, maybe there, yeah. By that what's that, Gulzar Nandyal, he was the prime minister once of India, stand-in prime minister. No. No, that you're thinking of Chandra Reddy. No, not Chandra Baba Rai. Chandra Reddy. He was the governor of UP. He came to the opening of the temple. There. He was very favorable to Srila Prabhupada. He was from Andhra. He was the governor of UP. Was it Chandra Reddy? Yeah. But there was Gulzarilal. I'm sorry. Doesn't really matter. Gulzarilal Nandu, something like that. He met Prabhupada at Kurukshetra, and he was promising to give land for a university and this and that. But he, using his position, he used government money for renovating the whole area. So anyway, that's a detail. That. On the side of the Sarovara, that means a big lake, and there's all this early morning, because I was out early morning chanting my rounds like before dawn. No one's up at that time, and hardly you'll find anyone. I'm so cold in the winter. There's all mist, and there's just next to the lake is a some cement, and then there's a covering over part of it, so it's covered. It's open on one side, and covered on three sides. That means down on the side and up, and open on one side, open to the lake. And I saw so many sadhus. They're just with a blanket over them, and they're sleeping there. It's so cold. And you go up even further north. You go up to Haridwar, Rishikesh. And you see the sadhus, they're smoking ganja, but they're very austere also. So that austerity, Prabhupada made a note of that. He said that the sadhus, even though they smoke bidi, but they are very austere, and they're not engaged in gross sense gratification. Some of them might be, but generally not. So anyway, I'm making the point that it's austerity in the sense of just accepting whatever the conditions are there, and not even trying to be austere, like standing on one toe for Hiranyakashipu. Oh, you see these sadhus, they hold their hand up until it just completely, what's the word, it atrophies, and it withers away, and it's dead, and it's useless austerity, but they stand up. They never sit down or lie down, day or night, for years. So their bodily limbs atrophy. So that's a useless austerity. That's karshayanta sharirastam. That's called in Gita by Krishna as being a demoniac austerity. But just accepting whatever conditions are there and going on with life was very much part of Indian life until recently. And you still see it to some extent. The poor people, they'll sleep on the station at night, and on the train they don't get a booking, so they just sleep on the floor, and they just tolerate because they have to. So that's not making any endeavor for personal comfort. It's very much part of the culture of bhajan in general. That means cultivating one's internal relationship with Krishna. And following Chaturmas, not just growing a beard, but actually following it very strictly. So those who are eager to pursue higher level devotion, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing, it's a very good thing, especially if one is older in years and has been seriously practicing Krishna consciousness for many years, and then there are some devotees who may want to go on with the preaching mission up to their last breath, as Srila Prabhupada said, and others, as Srila Prabhupada also said, you can retire and live in Vrindavan and cultivate Krishna consciousness like that. But it should be considered also that such sadhus, they chant many minimum 64 rounds. They live a very austere life, and they're actually very busy. It's not retirement in the sense of you just retire and you shoot the breeze with your friend. They have a daily schedule in which they'll visit so many temples. Each person has their own schedule. They may set it for themselves. Chant so many rounds, chant so many stotras, and their complete day is completely taken up with fully spiritual activities. So, this is to be understood. Then, it could be considered that this is very basic understanding for the which comes in the next verse, but it's so essential. Aham mama bhava shatte nama kabu hoina bhoga buddhi na charle aprakrita hoina. The holy name doesn't manifest to, is not revealed to someone in the bodily conception of life who thinks in terms of I and mine. Aham mama. Without relinquishing the enjoying mentality, the transcendental platform can never be attained. Very, very important. How many times did Srila Prabhupada quote, Atashi Krishna nama adina bhavet grahim indriyai sevan mukhe hijivado swayam eva spurati adha. The holy name and fame, qualities, pastimes of Krishna, Krishna reveals himself to someone, or doesn't reveal himself to someone who's in mundane consciousness, someone who's a purified consciousness. The purification comes by chanting, but not necessarily, or it may be very slow, because bahujanme jodi Hoy Shravan Kirtan Tobutan Apai Krishna Pade Premadan. One can go on hearing and chanting for many lives, but if there are offenses, then the prema will not arise. And we find in the 10 offenses, Aham Mama Adi Paramo. What's the next line? Nam Nisopi Aparada Krit. That to maintain the consciousness of I, me, and mine is an offense to the holy names. And that I, me, and mine consciousness is the basic consciousness of material existence, which springs from and is reinforced from, getting back to the same thing, sexual attraction. Watch the verse. Nunang pramata kuruteve karma indriya pritya aprinoti. No, it's not. It's No. I'm sorry. I'm really dead. I'm on. Pungsastri. Say the verse. Pungsastri amituni bhavametam tayoraho hridaya grantimaho. Ato griha kshetra sutabdi vitarijanasimoho yam. Aham mamaiti, aham mama. Thinking in terms of I, me, and mine springs from the attraction between male and female, and then it further manifests as attachment to home, family, children, society, money, property. And in this way, one is bewildered in terms of thinking in of I, me, and mine. So this aham mama bhav, that is very, in terms of thinking of I, me, and mine, is very much prominent in family life. Not that one cannot be a great devotee in family life, but it's a question of consciousness. Bhoga buddhi na charale a prakrita hoina. Unless one gives up the consciousness of enjoying this world, then one cannot come to the aprakrita position. Prakrita means material, aprakrita means spiritual in the sense of negation of material. There are other ways of saying spiritual. Adhyatmik, that which is concerned with spirit. Paramarthik, that which is on our highest level of interest or gain. But aprakrita, this word is being used here to distinguish it from the mundane. In other words, you can't be mundane and be spiritual at the same time. The whole point that's being made there. And this point is continued in the next verse. Prakrita jare bhoge krishna shiva hoina. Jaro vastu kono kale aprakrita hoina. Oh, I should get back to this first of all. The name ahamama bhavashate nam kobu hoina. This the verb here is hoi. The ahamama bhav sattva, in the situation of thinking in terms of I, me, and mine, the nam kabuna is never, and then the word is hoi, which is, it's like in Hindi, hota hai. So how do you translate that into English? Comes into being, happens, can happen. Yeah, it according to context, it changes, slightly changes. So, or it can just mean is not or cannot be. Purushka sharir se santan udpati nahi hota. A child is never born from a male body. It just doesn't happen. So, in the same way, if one is immaterial conscious, the name doesn't happen. You can say, well, what is all this? There's so many people are chanting Hare Krishna. But then we come to Ashadu Sangre Bhai Krishna Nam Nahihoi Nama Ko Bahire Bhate Tabu Nam Kobu Noi. We find Jagadananda Pandit in his Prem Vibhata says that if one is not chanting in the association of devotees, then it's not actually the holy name at all. And you say, yeah, well, yeah, it is. It is. You say, Krishna. But he says that the syllables are manifest, but not the name. But the name is the syllables, isn't it? It's like, I went to Vrindavan and I bought these beautiful deities. I got them at a really good price. You can't buy Krishna. You can't go to Vrindavan to Loi Bazaar and buy Krishna. If we think like that, then we don't get Krishna. We may get beautiful deities or what we see as beautiful forms, but it's by the same thing, by the service attitude Krishna reveals himself. So in the same way, if someone's in the consciousness of material, enjoying this material world, then he may be a very good singer, a very beautiful voice, may play the mridanga with very big muscles with tattoos on them. But the holy name is not necessarily, the holy name is not forced to reveal himself to such a person. Just like Krishna is not necessarily, he doesn't have to, because, well, I bought these deities and I made a temple and so many people are coming and so many people are praising. But it doesn't mean that Krishna reveals himself. Krishna, if he wants, he'll manifest there. If he not, he won't. So the same thing with the holy name. We can't force the appearance of the holy name by any mundane endeavors. So as I was saying, that we might think that this Prakriti Rasa Shatadushini it's suitable for something Sahajiyas in Bengal in the 1930s or something like that, but it's applicable in Vaishnav society today, to ourselves also we should consider. So the next verse, Prakriti Jarya Bhoge Krishna Seva Hoina. Then, yeah, if one is enjoying this material world, then Krishna Seva Hoina, we don't actually perform service to Krishna. If we're thinking of it in terms of enjoyment, Jaro Bhashta Konoi Kale Aprakrita Hoina, and mundane things can never be spiritual. Well, wait a minute. Srila Prabhupada always gave the example that the microphone is spiritual because it's used in Krishna's service. So doesn't that contradict what's stated here? Why not? Ah, but something's material if it's not used in Krishna's service.
It's being spiritualized.
Ah, yeah, but what's stated here, material objects can never be transcendental. But it's a material object and it becomes spiritualized.
Ashakti towards material objects makes it material. Towards an object makes it material.
The attachment to a material, the attachment to enjoying it makes it material.
But the application of using it in Krishna.
So what the proper understanding is that actually, in one sense, everything is spiritual because everything is Krishna's energy. But it becomes material in our conception due to our misconception. So as long as we're considering something material, which means it's something for my enjoyment, then it can never be spiritual. And that refers to the holy name also. The holy name, if we consider the holy name or the deity of Krishna to be something that I enjoy, then Krishna doesn't reveal himself. We may get mundane enjoyment out of it. Now this is a very delicate point, because we see in the beginning of the Krishna consciousness movement in the Western world, Srila Prabhupada would always encourage he made it enjoyable for them. In the book, I'm in the process of compiling The Mood and Mission of Srila Prabhupada, I pointed this out, that Srila Prabhupada made it fun, and the devotees, they felt it was fun, and it's spiritual, and it's fun. Srila Prabhupada gradually stressed more and more the seriousness of Krishna consciousness, but it never stops being fun. But it's a matter of developing the consciousness of service to Krishna, that we're not here just to enjoy. Enjoy, eat prasad up to your neck and some more. At least people can't leave. They can't move, so they can't leave. It's but Srila Prabhupada is there to oversee everyone and guide them. And he gave them a taste of spiritual bliss, even though they had no idea what it was. And he carefully nurtured them and brought them up. But if we institutionalize and rationalize that we're here to enjoy, then everything remains at a low level and then it becomes perverse. Now, I've been going through this Vishnu Sahasranama, and I often in the commentary, in the English version of the commentary, the Sri Vaishnav commentator who compiled it all, he compiled from the commentaries of the Parashara Bhatta and Shankaracharya, especially V.V. Ramanuja, and then later he started doing from the Sri Vaishnav, from the Madhvacharya. He didn't do Madhva's commentary himself, but Satya Sandha Yatiraj, and then he also does from the Dharma Chakra writer, who is someone who never gave their name. And there's also that one, Baladev Vidyabhushan is also there. He gives short commentaries. And then most of them give short commentaries. And and one more whose name I don't remember, who gives unique commentaries every... Anyway, he often says how Parashara Bhatta is explaining this so that we can better enjoy the qualities of the Lord. He often says like that. So that concept is there. We're enjoying to hear the qualities of the Lord. Yes, it's there. The qualities of the Lord. We devotees enjoy to hear. Shrinu Sukadam Shubhadam Bhavasar. To hear about the 10 avatars is, it gives us pleasure. Shrinvanti Gayanti Grananti Abhikshasa Smaranti Nandanti means to take pleasure in hearing about the glories of the Lord. So that is there. But we also find very strongly in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya the notion of paricharya, kainkarya. Paricharya in this world we serve the Lord, and kainkarya in the spiritual world we go to serve Him personally. And then when we meet devotees from the Ramanujacharya, they always introduce themselves as Dasa. Yeah, well, I'm Ramanuja, servant of Ramanuja. Yeah, and they'll sign their name, Adiyan, servant. So those things, the servant likes to hear about the qualities of the master. It's very much understood he's the servant. But when we take the holy name and hearing about the pastimes of Krishna to be something for me to enjoy, then we get cut off. Can be a very fine line. That's why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is warning us. And we may have in kirtan also some wonderful feeling, but unless it's based on the strong mood of service, that will be a mundane feeling. And then there's that story of Sargal Singh. I'll get into this later, the mundane emotions. The whole town is lamenting because Sargal Singh died. And then someone asks, well, who is this Sargal Singh? Well, I don't know, but someone else told me Sargal Singh died and seemed to be a very important person, so I'm mourning also. And then who told you? And then you go to them, who told you? And then he told me. And you get back to the washerman, my donkey called Sargal Singh died. And therefore I'm mourning because I don't have a donkey to take my load to the river anymore. So the whole thing, everyone's feeling, and you get that from movies. we willingly partake in an illusion. We know that there are no lovers on the screen, and even if we were at the set, it's actors pretending to have strong feelings, which they don't really feel. So that's one illusion, and then it's made into another illusion by making it into a film. And then we gladly partake in that, and then we come out and or whatever the feeling may be. There are different rasas. So we willingly partake in that illusion. But it can be with the holy name also and with devotional service that we have very strong feelings and we think, well, I'm feeling for Krishna. But that has to be judged by one's, it'll be seen by one's behavior and what is one's whole attitude to life. Advancement in Krishna consciousness depends on the attitude of the performer. I had experience of this starting in the 1970s in Bengal. You go to these Nam Yajnas, in which there are paid groups who travel around. They're like rock groups, except they're poor people, actually. They don't get paid much. Everyone was poor in Bangladesh at that time, pretty much, at least in the villages. So they'd do their gig, and then it'd be fabulous mridanga and flute playing and the movements and everything, and it's just to invoke feelings in the people, and they felt it. They'd be crying. But then you'd see that you usually have a two-hour gig, approximately 2 hours. One praharam is ashtaprahar. So they have one, yeah, ashtaprahar or whatever, shalaprahar, bhatrishprahar. So they'd have one gig, and if the other group, the next group is late coming, then they have to keep the kirtan going on because it's akhanda harinam, non-stop. But they'll just do it as a formality. And then they're looking upset. Why haven't they come? 2 minutes ago, they were leaping in the air and crying and falling on the ground. And then the time's up and they're just going on. And then they go off stage and the first thing they do is smoke a bidi because it's been 2 hours. They didn't smoke. And the widows, there are plenty of widows in Bangladesh at that time. It's just after the Pakistani genocide. The widows, they would do Vaishnav seva, bidi seva. They'd offer bidis to the performers. So it's not real. It's not what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give. Vairagya vidya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give devotional service with. Vairagya means non-attachment, detachment, and vidya, actual knowledge. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give this, but if that is lacking, then it's not the real thing. And we have to be very careful. I was wondering, how is this? They've got it right in so many ways, but they've got it wrong so badly also. I'm talking about the what we would call sahajiyas, Prakrita sahajiyas. It's a blanket term that Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur used for all these different kinds of people. But how could they get it so wrong? To a large extent, they just didn't know. No one told them. It's been, one of our devotees is going back to 1970s again. One of our devotees, one of the first disciples of Jayapataka Maharaj. I was saying to him, you know, what is this? All these so-called gurus and they're eating fish. And he became upset and said, well, our guru, he's talking about his village guru, he's initiated by Jayapataka Maharaj in the meantime. But our guru, he ate fish. He eats fish. Who are you to say? We're Vaishnavas from birth. Who are you to say? So they might get upset. That's why Shubhag Maharaj told us that Srila Prabhupada told him, because he joined ISKCON, he's from Bengal, but he joined ISKCON in London. It was initiated by Srila Prabhupada in London, and Srila Prabhupada told him that you learn the philosophy of Krishna consciousness from these Western devotees, but the culture, what you'd learn from your mother. So the culture is very good, but they lost the thread. And I was wondering, how could they have such a great thing and they're smoking bidis and eating fish? And we didn't see much illicit sex going on, but that was generally looked down on. But that was sometimes going on. It depends. There are different. We say Prakrita Sahajya. It's a blanket. It's used by Bhaktisthan Saraswati Thakur as a blanket term for all different subsets of different upper sampradayas. I was wondering how could that be. But the danger is there. If we don't properly stick to the Rupa Nuga path, then it's quite likely that what Srila Prabhupada brought will be misused, misrepresented, and the same kind of thing can happen. That's why Srila Prabhupada emphasized so much, read the books, study the books. We'll find his letters. Srila Prabhupada said, chant 16, rise early, chant 16 rounds, follow the four regulated principles. He emphasized again and again and again. And we're seeing the beginning of that, just like that we see quite often here in America, that man and woman, the devotees, they meet, they're not related by marriage or by birth, and they give each other a hug. It's nice. It feels nice. It's being nice to each other. But it's not within proper Vaishnava culture, and it's very dangerous. But if we think, well, I'm a devotee, she's a devotee, and we're just exchanging our appreciation of each other, very, very dangerous. So we should know what the culture is and follow it, and why there are so many restrictions. That's the Prakriti Sahajiyas, they want the rasa and the prema without the restrictions, and then indulge they take their mundane feelings to be spiritual. You see that the widows are bringing biddies for the Vaishnavas. It's a very nice exchange. They offer it very humbly, take the dust of the kirtaniya's feet. It's a very nice exchange, and they don't have any ill intent, but no one's taught them properly, and they take that to be proper. The guru comes to your village, and then you have to give the best fish, you have to give hilash, the best fish in South Bangladesh, where the sea water mixes with the fresh water. You got the tastiest fish. What is that? Magar Macha Jol Mukhe Haribo. With your mouth you drink the juice of the Magar Mach. That's one kind of fish. And you chant the holy name. And they think it's all right. Sounds good. Sounds like a nice slogan, right? That's like Jato Mat Tato Pat. Sounds good. Sounds good. Nice. Inclusive. All paths are the same. Don't get in anyone's case. Don't have this superiority syndrome. Don't look down. Don't be judgmental. Oh. Had to be very, very careful. Jaro shatta barta mane chit kabo hoina, jaro vastu chit hoi bhakti kabo bolena. That which is, actually I translated this, dull material objects are never conscious. I mean, I wasn't the first to translate it, but I went through it line by line and went through it. But jara sata could also mean one's present state of consciousness. I'll get back to that if I ever revise that book. That which is material now can never be. If we're now in material consciousness, we can't say that we're in spiritual consciousness. And to ascribe spirituality to that which is material, devotees never say that. They never ascribe consciousness or the spiritual nature to that which is mundane. So that's what is implied here, is that a clear understanding of a distinction between that which is material and that which is not material is the beginning of our spiritual journey. We can't begin to enter into spiritual life unless we have a clear understanding of the difference between matter and spirit, which is how, of course, Lord Krishna begins his teachings in Bhagavad Gita Arjuna is speaking on the platform of dharma, and Krishna speaks on the platform of paramartha. So there we see again a parallel between the Mimamsa Sutras and the Mimamsa Sutras and the Brahma Sutras. Atato dharma jignyasa, begin with that. But and then, you've done all that dharma, and now you come to Brahma, that which is spiritual. So the spiritual, we may be chanting Hare Krishna, we may be worshipping the deity. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, better to sweep the street, which is for the lowest class of people, bhangis, who are looked down by the Brahmins. And the Brahmins worship deities. They're very high class in the caste system. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, better to earn a living as a street sweeper rather than show the deity for making a living. Sensational. He also coined that term, Shalaram Dara Badam Bhanga. Badam in Bengali means peanuts. So using the Shalagram Shila to break peanuts and to break open the peanut shell and eat the peanuts. So he gave that. And apparently there was some instance which he'd actually heard about. I've seen not exactly that, but in my travels throughout India and throughout the years, I've seen horrendous things. Nothing coming to mind just exactly now, but the whole attitude and you see that, just like people say, well, Krishna, yeah, he had to die because he was cursed, or his family was wiped out by the curse of Gandhari. He had to die by the hunter's arrow because, as Rama, he shot Vali, like this. And that's actually there. That's the Asura Vimohana. That to bewilder the demons, such narrations are there. So the point being made here, which will be made in more specifically as we go through this, is that one really has to enter upon spiritual life with proper understanding and pursue spiritual life, enter spiritual life with proper understanding, pursue spiritual life with proper understanding, and regularly hone our understanding by regularly associating with devotees. Hone, you know that word? Yeah, it means to just like keep sharp. We have to regularly, just like a knife, you have to regularly sharpen it. So we have to, even our, who's that, this Kavi, he would, was that sharpening the blade? He would talk about that. Yeah, so you have to regularly sharpen, keep it sharp by regularly hearing, chanting, applying ourselves to the process. Otherwise, we'll see things mundane to the extent that we'll see a shalagram to the extent of using it for breaking nuts. Which the forefathers of the pujari who does that would have been horrified. But what happens when the hearing and chanting, or specifically hearing, is minimized, or it's mixed with the element of enjoyment, without a proper understanding or without properly emphasizing that we are servants, we're primarily servants, we're not here to enjoy, unless that is emphasized, then our vision becomes mundane. And there's going to be a festival today, so many people will be coming, so I have to dress the deities very nicely. And no, it'll cost so too much money. No, but we'll get it back. If we do the deity worship nicely, then we can ask people for donations, more. That's why we have to do deity worship nicely. So these kind of thoughts can arise. That's why you find in any holy place in India, there's some big temple, and you'll find so many smaller temples all around which people have put basically for commercial purposes. The land next to a major temple, you don't see it so much in South India, but in Vrindavan area it's very prominent. Not Vrindavan town, because every square inch is taken over and the land mafia has their eyes on it. But if you go out, just like in Govardhan, around in Govardhan Parikrama Marg, it used to be mostly empty, but then gradually people established temples and then some tree which some people used to know has some importance. Someone goes and sits there and tells everyone stories about the tree, and then its importance increases, and then other people start to build little shrines all around. The idea is that people are coming and they'll give something. Everyone gives 10 paisa, and if you have enough people in a day, it's enough to keep going, maintain your family or whatever. So this kind of consciousness arises. And it can be, when people are very poor, they may, let's be practical. Daridra dosho gunarashi nashi. The poverty destroys all good qualities. That's not from Shastra. That's from Kalidas. But Prabhupada quoted it. So all these considerations. That's why Bhakti Siddhanta, he was very strongly establishing all these things, because it had been lost in course of time. To a large extent lost. And it will be lost. It's inevitable, actually. It's inevitable. When any great teacher comes, inevitably, not everyone follows as they should follow. Religious teacher, even in Marxism, the great teacher, Karl Marx, and there's different opinions of how he should be followed in the name of Marxism. We have billionaires in China, and still supposed to be a communist. Still the ruling party is the Communist Party of China. So I don't want to get into a discussion about Marxism, but I'm just making the point that it should be, or Leonid Brezhnev, the head of the Soviet Union, who's probably the longest, apparently had a whole fleet of luxury cars. So it's again the same principle, which are all animals are equal, but some are more equal than others. It's the tendency to take a good teaching and twist it for one's own sense gratification and justify it in the name of the teacher. You take some of his teachings, take them out of context, interpret them in a certain way so that what was actually intended, you come out with the opposite thing. This is what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is warning about. And it would be foolish to think that it can't happen with us who are aspiring followers of Srila Prabhupada. So we should consider these things.
Thank you for the clash. The topic about making no personal endeavor for comfort. You were talking about people sleeping next to the sarovara. And then you said that there are some sadhus that really make no personal endeavor for their comfort. They're bhajan anandis. They have programs of chanting and they busy schedules. So I was wondering about the gurus of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta and Srila Bhaktivinoda. Their pictures are on the altar. Were they in this category that you described?
Yeah, Gorkhishodas Babaji Maharaj and Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. They personified what it means to be completely detached from this material world and completely attached to Krishna. If you're on that path, if you want to do specifically bhajan, then that is the perfection of that path of bhajan. No attachment whatsoever to this world, and no manifestation of any personal desire for any comfort or any such thing. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati also lived like that before 1918, in the period between, well, specifically when he was living in Mayapur, having been sent there by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He lived in a hut that he made himself, made of just straw hut, which that could be considered a bit of a luxury, hardly a luxury in the harsh climate of Bengal. Very hot, cold in the winter, and heavy rains. And he was living absolutely renounced like that. But then, when his preaching mission started, he appeared to become attached to this world, in the sense that he had buildings, cars, fancy clothes. But he did that to fulfill the order of his guru, to preach. Because he saw the need to preach. This is a big topic, actually. He saw the need to, I've spoken about it before, he saw the need to preach among the people who were setting the trends in society. That means the foreigners, hard to reach, but the Bhadralok, the gentlemanly class of Bengal at that time, of which he was a product. If you want to, caste-wise, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was Kayasta, and the Kayastas in Bengal, many of them, they went to English medium schools, which is very unusual at the time, and they became prominent in society. And they were very influential at that time, the English-educated Kayastas especially. I've given a list of their names so many times. At that time, or around that time, of course, Vivekananda was hugely influential. It's from the same family as Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Hatkola Datas. It means the same Upajati. Then Aurobindo Ghosh was very influential. Jagadish Chandra Bose. Tagore is Brahmin. Thakur. It's a Brahmin name. Pronounced Tagore, the anglicization. They were Brahmins. Ishwar Chandra Vidyasagar was also, a little earlier than that, hugely influential. He's from a Brahmin background. He's a household name in Bengal even today. Bhaktivinoda Thakur studied under him. Who else? There were so many. So they're a very, very influential class, and Bhaktisiddhanta, you see, their influence lives on till the present time. Vivekananda, Aurobindo, then Jagadish Chandra Bose. Jagadish Chandra Bose, not so much. He was a scientist more than a social. There are others, but somehow. Subhash Chandra Bose, yeah, he is also. Bose, Datta, these are all Kayasta names in Bengal. They're hugely influential up to the present day. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati wanted to reach them, but he knew that if I'm convey myself, carry myself like Gaurakishore Das Babaji, they're not going to come. I have to go to them, go in their midst, and preach among them. So he adopted all these things, but his mood was anasaktasya vishaya, not being attached to all of that.
Like Prabhupada said, the chandeliers in the temples, we put those to attract the people. We don't need the chandelier.
Yeah. When Srila Prabhupada was asked, why are you building this big temple in Vrindavan, you're followed the six Goswamis, they lived under a different tree every night. Prabhupada said, if I was sitting under a tree, you wouldn't be here asking me that question. He didn't exactly say that, but that was the import. That it is not for us, it's for you. You need it. because you wouldn't give me any importance otherwise. He also said that we have these three temples in India, that's enough. Mayapur, Vrindavan, Bombay, and now we just distribute books. When he was given land in Hyderabad, he developed it. And he wanted a center. He said different things at different times. But anyway, that's another huge discussion, isn't it?
Guru Maharaj, you made a, I think it was a translation of one of the verses. You said a real guru does not give rasa without rati. You know, could you explain that just a little bit?
That will be explained more as we go through this series.
Okay. And also, Guru Maharaj, there's like this common thing that many Hindus state, but I doubt if it's true, but was the hunter who shot Krishna Vali in his past life?
I'm not aware if there's any statement like that. There is, if we've seen the 11th canto commentary, it says who he was. It may be, but there's some bhav there, but the hunter was very sorry. And we see also that Vali, before he died, he was apologetic. First of all, he blamed Ram, and then when Ram explained to him, he was very apologetic and he left in good consciousness. He wasn't envious of Ram. That's according to Valmiki. There are so many Ramayans. Different people may say Ananda Ramayan, Adhyatma Ramayan. Yeah, then these are in Sanskrit, then they're vernacular Ramayans, Kamban Ramayan, Ramcharitmanas is very famous, Krithivasa Ramayan, and there's that Yoga Vashishta Ramayana. Yeah, that's Mayavad gone wild. Really heavy. Heavy, heavy Mayavad, so that we don't accept that as authoritative. Hare Krishna, Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Dante Nitaya Trunakang Padayon Yipatya Kritvacha Kakushata Metada Humbravimi He Sadhava Sakala Eva Vihaya Durad Gauranga Chandra Charne Parivadatu jano yatadatava nanamukuriyam Hari rasa madhiram adhati mata bhuvi vidotama nirtama nirvishra Hari Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hari 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Rama, Hari Hari.